Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
To say, if you don't win four of the first five, it's better to be in a position where you lost three of the first five as long as you win the last one. Go ahead. Save me, Rick.
All right. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com station. People ask me what that means, and that is when it comes to all the streaming, the other apps and websites that you would use. Those are all obsolete. You got to get radio.com, radio.com app, and online you will hear us stream through. The number to call, 888-957-9570. Let's go to Dave, who's in San Jose. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, what's up? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, so yesterday I was listening to Urban. I think it was Urban and Tony, and they were talking about guys to go get for pitching depth. And they were talking about like guys like DeGrom and Syndergaard. And I don't think those guys are available anyway. And some of the guys that they were talking about, like trading Barreto to get DeGrom, that's not going to get DeGrom. One of the guys that I like that should be cheap and shouldn't take a lot to get is a guy like Mike Fiers. Got like a 3.5 ERA. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. He's a guy that can give you a lot of innings and allow you to get to a dominant bullpen.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. I agree with you. Franklin Barreto is not going to be enough to get a guy like DeGrom. And it is kind of human nature, I've noticed over the years, JD, that you overvalue your own players. Like I take calls when – I remember taking a call. Somebody wanted to trade Vogt and Sogard for Bryce Harper. I mean, sometimes you tend to – or when people call me, they want to give away all your worst – package together your five worst players for a star like the other GM would go for.
Yeah,
that.
you want Matt Joyce for Shin-Soo Chu.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Now that is
you want to trade Joyce injured on the DL
batting 200
for Chu.
Yeah, probably not. Bernie is back in Oakland. How you doing, Bernie?
I'm good.
Were you
Rick,
doing the Bernie?
Love your show, man.
Thank you. You doing the Bernie lean? Is that why we missed you?
What? Well, I'm a first-time caller. I didn't even know what to do. But anyway, Rick, love your show. Love everybody at 95.7 The Game. It's an addiction with me. I got two questions for you. One with the A's. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
All right. So my first question with the A's, I got two. First question with the A's is like, who's on top of the A's selling list? And question number two
who's on top of their song list?
No, the selling list.
Oh, you mean who are they trying to trade?
Yeah.
Well, you have guys in walk years like Luke Croy and, as JD mentioned, Joyce and Jed Lowry. And I know a lot of people would love to get a guy like a Trinan who's still under team control.
Okay.
But we think that the A's are actually going to be buyers. We don't think they're going to be sellers.
Okay. Because a buddy of mine says Chapman's on the block or whatever. They want money for him.
No, you're.
But that's a buddy of mine.
Yeah, he's wrong. All right. Hey, listen, thanks for the call, Bernie. A little stop-start, but I get you. And listen, just to address the Chapman thing.
Wow.
It was brought up, I don't know, it was about 6 weeks ago that the A's, there was a rumor they put out feelers on signing him through his Arbiers, and he said no.
Sure.
I actually had a guy call and say, get him out of here if he doesn't want to be in Oakland.
Oh,
I'm
my
like,
God.
That's not what it is.
No, and that's not what you do.
That's not what it
like,
is.
The thing I always get. Go ahead.
Well, let me just
I'm not
going to
get off on a tangent.
It's like when I mentioned George Springer, when before he ever played one day in the bigs, they tried to get him to sign through his Arbiers. He said no because he thought instead of signing for $25 million for 3 years, I might get $25 million per year. He bet on himself, and it paid off. We know that the A's got a discount on Doolittle through his. We know the Giants got an amazing discount on Bumgarner. And I have nothing against a 22-year-old kid signing a $25 million contract instead of signing a $200 million contract. But the reason Chapman said no is because he thinks he's going to be a star, and it would be stupid, and Matt Chapman would be stupid, if he signed for some hometown discount through his Arbiers. It had nothing to do whether he wanted to be in Oakland or not. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, it's good for the A's to try.
Sure.
But the way you have to look at it, if you're an A's fan, and I, because, you know, what burns A's fans more than anything? It's the inability to keep their players,
sure,
right? To keep their core guys. The reality is, most teams don't want to keep most of their players beyond the 6 years of club control. The reality is, once you get, and there's exceptions to it. There are exceptions,
yeah,
to it.
Cal Ripken.
But I'm gonna go back and use the early 2000s A's as an example.
Okay.
Did you want to keep Jason Giambi for another? Did you want to sign Jason Giambi to a 10-year contract when the A's let him go? Would that have been good? Or you know what I mean? Like that. Even Miguel Tejada, who had a couple of good years with the Orioles. Do you want to sign Miguel Tejada to an 8-year contract at the point? No. The A's brought those guys up. They had a hell of a 5-6 year run, and it got to a point where it's not just you're a poor team that can't do it or won't do it, even though the ownership may have the money. Mm-hmm. The A's in some ways are actually fortunate that they're never in a position where they're going to sign a guy to a terrible contract like that. And I think that's where you have to get kind of wrap your head around this next 5-6 years. You know, and you mentioned the ARB. Well, nobody makes it to their ARB anyway. You're right. The A's of Billy is, they've traded guys a little soon. Think Astros, think Royals, think Cubs in terms of all three had core groups that came up together that made a run, and then you had to make decisions on guys. So you're going to have to make decisions on guys. But you won the World Series before you really ever had to pay any of those guys.
Right.
And you paid other guys, veterans, to come in and help you get over the hump.
Right.
But that core group, you didn't.
And just to inject for Dayton Moore in Kansas City, their top two pitching prospects were Manaea and Finnegan, who they got Zobrist and Cueto for. Then they made that move, their top prospects.
Exactly. Exactly right. And that helps you get over the top to win championships. But that core group of, you know, Hosmer and, you know, those guys,
Moose
and Gordon, mm-hmm, and all of that. And you go up and down. And yeah, they wound up keeping Gordon. Hosmer's gone. You make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Kane is gone.
Yeah, Kane is gone. You know, you look at, so it's like every team has those decisions. And sure, the Cubs may make a different choice. The Giants made different choices when they had opportunities to. But the reality is the Giants won World Series with their homegrown core before they had to pay Sandoval, before they had to pay Crawford, before they had to pay Belt, and they paid Posey handsomely early. Basically, the Giants did with Posey what I think Chapman would like. Chapman would want that deal where it's, yeah, you're getting the huge deal. Maybe you're getting the deal through your Arbiers, but you're getting $130 million. That's the kind of deal that it sounds like Chapman wants in a year and a half or 2 years.
Right, and the beauty of it is that the A's don't even have to worry about those Arbiers yet, not even next year or beyond for a lot of guys. They are exactly what they want. They are minimum wage talent who are above average players.
Yes, exactly,
yes.
Right. And they're, I think you could make, I mean, you always get into this, are they ahead of schedule? Yeah, they're ahead of schedule. They're ahead of schedule because they're already winning. They're not ahead of schedule in that these players are better than expected. They're ahead of schedule because it's all adding up to wins right now, because they found some magic at the back end of their bullpen, and they found some magic at the end of games. That's the reason they are where they are now. The players are good no matter what. Piscotty and Olson, like these guys could have pretty similar numbers. Chapman, Simeon, like all these guys could have pretty similar numbers, and they could have five fewer wins, you know, if they don't get one hit in like six games.
And that's the thing, too. When I was talking to Vince Catronio yesterday on the air, he pointed out, I forget who the guy was, the defensive guru, who said that Chapman and Olson are defensively the best at their positions in baseball. Both of those guys are minimum wage at $547,500. Next year, they will go up to whatever the next minimum is. The year after that, in 2020, they still will not be ARB eligible. These guys will not be millionaires until 2021. And
yeah,
you're getting a great bargain out of them. But that's the thing. We got 40 rounds of picks. We'll sign 35 of them, and we'll find a guy in there.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. And that's where the A's are ahead of the game, because now they can pick and choose how they want to add the ancillary pieces to help them get over the top. And, oh, by the way, well, what's the biggest weakness on this team? Starting pitching, right? I think everybody would agree. Hmm. That's the biggest weakness, although they've figured out ways to patch it together enough to be in a great position. They've outperformed their starting pitching significantly at this point if you look at their overall record. But they've got starting pitchers on the way that are young, too.
Yes.
So you know you're going to have a couple of guys in the rotation that are coming. You know you still have a Manaea who you like. That's the only guy I would say is guaranteed a spot the next couple of years. And you're also in a position where you're not paying anything, so you can go out and get a couple of veteran starters to anchor your rotation. Maybe not DeGroms and Syndergaards, but you can go out and you can get, you know, you can go out and get the next Rich Hill, you know, what Rich Hill was to the Dodgers, you know, after the A's traded him over there. You can go get the veteran guy that can help you get over the top and win a ton of games.
By the way, Manaea, one more year, minimum wage before he'll go to his first RBR. Let's go to our friend Bleacher Dave in Oakland. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, I tell you one thing, that they got on time. They dumped Sonny Gray not too soon.
Yeah, that ended up being pretty prescient at the moment, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Olsen, I'm thinking about these parallels with Olsen and Chapman to the Warriors. You got two young guys under contract for less than they should be making, although in baseball it's by road, it's what they're going to make. But you're fortunate to potentially have, you know, budding superstars or budding stars at a low enough price point. You can go out and do something around them before they start, you know, to make more money. And so, you know, as we all know, this Fisher and its ownership group I think they have to retain somebody, and whether it's the right retention or not, just to begin to try and, you know, establish some credibility. And we all know, and we're kind of tired of talking about it, but this Chris Davis thing, no matter what you think about him or what his value is, you know, to commit to the market and begin to show that they're serious about being competitive, you know, kind of like the dude that plays in the facility next door that was built at the same time as making money hand over fist. Like, that irony just is, I can't stop getting away from it. Loving this series, though, man. It's been a while since it was this festive, but for people who were saying that this is probably a playoff-like intensity or the most intensest rivalry has been, didn't go through, and both teams were contenders in the early odds.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, it brings the Bay Area together. Mm-hmm. So I sat down at the bar with A's fan on my left and two Giants fans on my right. We just spent, you know, a good, beautiful, you know, afternoon in the Bay just talking about baseball and doing stuff together. So, you know, baseball fans, this is fun. It's a lot more fun when the A's got the gun and they're up 2-1 and they're coming to the DH park next week because, man, those hitters are relentless. They're tenacious. They seem to have an air of inevitability about it. It's an irresistible force. And however this thing unfolds, and, you know, it looks like you're taking pitches, and it's like it's not just hotness, it's not just flux, there's something to it. They'll slow down.
Yeah.
But we have some entertaining players to watch.
All right. Hey, Bleacher Dave, I got to run. Thank you so much for the call. 888-957-9570. By the way, Chris Davis, one more year of arbitration. He's making 10.5 this year and very much deserves it, going 40 and 100 for a third year in a row. We got more baseball talk on the other side. Zachary Reimer is going to join us from Bleacher Report. He's John Dickinson. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on 95.7 The Game.
Now back. 95.7 The Game. Soy el fuego que arde tu piel. Soy el agua que mata tu sed. El castillo, la torre, yo soy.
All right, yes, Narcos. Not the show, but the wonderful song. Sweet. Rick Tittle and John Dickinson here on a early Sunday evening, as we have arrived at the All-Star break. We're well into the second half of the games, but how is your team doing? 888-957-9570 and the PenskeAutoSales.com text line 95795. It's great to welcome back to the show Zachary Reimer, the baseball writer for the Bleacher Report, and Rick Tittle and John Dickinson here. Zachary, we were just discussing The Jeff Samardzija situation, when you think about guys like Holland having to leave the rotation to get him back in because of the money he makes. Now on the DL again, and JD suggesting that they might have to get to the point where they can't rely on him anymore. What do you think the Giants stand now with Samardzija?
You know, whether or not they could rely on him at any point this season was kind of a good question. Been hurt, and when he's been pitching, he's not been pitching very well. There's kind of no way around that. Putting him on the DL now, with the trade deadline being in such close proximity, it's only natural to wonder, like, do they go outside the organization to fill this hole that they have in their rotation now? And then you run into another question. What can they actually do given their extremely limited wiggle room before the luxury tax and relatively thin farm system? So certainly not the best outcome they could have hoped for at this point in the season.
Yeah, and you just look at as far as internal options go, and the Giants actually do have a few pitchers that have been far more serviceable than Samardzija. Samardzija's just been bad. So I think they can fill that rotation spot. You mentioned the wiggle room as far as where they are up against the tax. The one thing that they've stated they're looking for is some right-handed pop. Even if it's not a star-level player, what do you think the market is in terms of finding, you know, role players that have a little bit of power, as we draw closer to the deadline?
It's a pretty specific need, but you could go maybe bring back Adam Duvall. Guy plays for the Reds, not the most consistent hitter, but has some power from the right side of the plate, plays a pretty good left field. Possibility. Otherwise, kind of scrolling through the list. That's a really specific need. I'm not really sure.
Well, you think about it, Zachary, you know, with the Oakland A's now only 3 games out of the second wild card, just playing gangbusters at 13 over .500. Seattle going through a little bit of a bad patch right now. And we know that the A's rotation is Sean Manaea, and then it's either an old guy or a guy with a high ERA or a guy who's just come off the DL. It's basically Manaea and 4 guys. And so when I look at some of the options out there and I hear names like Colon and Shields, I would not give up a top prospect for those guys. So how available are the Haps of the world? And what about the Mets with DeGrom and Syndergaard? I mean, it's just kind of, is that pie in the sky type of stuff?
I hesitate to kind of entertain those kind of moves for a team like the A's. Above all, this is an organization that is always going to do the pragmatic thing of, yes, we're in the playoff race, but right now we're only gunning for that second wild card spot. Is that worth completely tearing apart our farm system to upgrade our chances? I can't see this team doing something like that. More realistically, I think you're probably looking at some mid-range rental types who are just going to buffer the depth of that entire pitching staff. So I don't know if they're going to be in and a half because it seems like the market frame is pretty robust and there are big market contenders going after him. Could be out of their reach, but maybe a reunion with a guy like Tyson Ross, quietly having a pretty good season in San Diego. He's a rental. He's making very little money this year. Could go get a guy like him. Maybe you pursue like a Matt Harvey or a Lance Lynn. A lot of rentals out there. Not the most, not ace-type pitchers, but guys who can help a team like the A's where that rotation in particular has been a revolving door, and they really just need more solid pieces behind Manaea for sure.
Zachary, what do you make of the A's run here over the course of the last month? Do you think this team does enough of the right things to tell you they're for real and only going to get hotter? Do you think they stay about the same? They cool off? What do you make of the A's big picture as far as this season goes and the sustainability of what they've done to this point?
Yeah, I think if there's one thing that kind of gives me pause about taking it for granted that they're this good is that, before this stretch began, they had a 4.05 team ERA. During this stretch, it's a 4 ERA, basically the same kind of pitching. And the offense has been good, but not scorching hot. So basically what they've been doing is just getting a few lucky breaks, but also just, like you said, playing really good baseball. Is that worth a 20-6 record or 21-6 record over the last 27 games at this point? Probably not, which is the thing where it's like, okay, well, if they are going to continue this, maybe don't trust too much in the team you already have. Go out and make it better so you can actually sustain this for the stretch run and give that Mariners team, which, speaking of kind of bad luck coming back to bite them, there was no way they were going to maintain that stretch where they were just winning every one-run game and just kind of winning every close game they get into. that was never going to last. So if you're going to chase those guys down, you got to keep this up.
And you think about it, Zachary, with the Mariners when they lost Cano, a lot of people thought, oh, my gosh, there goes this season. And now coming back and not playing second base, not going to the postseason, is that almost a quandary what they do with him now?
I think if you're in their position, you focus on making your first postseason in 17 years and worry about the Cano situation later. Whatever he can give you in late August and throughout September, fine. But the reality is they've shown that they're pretty good without him. Now, you know, they've come back to earth recently, but having D. Gordner on a play second base, turns out going to get him over the offseason was a huge move. Rest of the lineup is pretty good, and they've gotten some really good results out of some, you know, not the biggest name pitchers and guys like Marco Gonzalez and Wade LeBlanc. So you kind of ride it out, and whatever Cano can give you after this year, you take it.
What do you think they need? Because clearly they're going to have to do something to in an attempt to hold off the A's. Is it more relief help? Is it another starter? What are their areas of need?
Definitely pitching. I thought they needed another starter even before James Paxton got hurt again, and now it's like, okay, well, they need a legit starting pitcher, more of a top of the rotation type than a mid rotation type, I think, because I mentioned guys like Marco Gonzalez, Wade LeBlanc. They've been great stories, but I don't necessarily trust them to continue what they've been doing throughout the rest of the season. So they need some top-flight starting pitching, and I actually think they could use some more relief pitching as well. So basically what it comes down to is they're far from perfect, which if you're the A's, that definitely bodes well.
Rick and JD with Zach Reimer from the Bleacher Report. A couple more questions for Zach here, 95.7 The Game. What the A's have got out of Blake Treinen has been pretty amazing. He's very deservingly an all-star. You look at the 24 saves. The ERA of 0.94 is the lowest of any reliever in the American League. And yet, I have talked to some baseball people who aren't believers yet. They want to see more out of him. His delivery, his arm slot has changed. The 98 and sink. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. I feel like I've seen enough. I think he's the real deal. What do you think about Treinen?
He has quickly become one of my favorite pitchers to watch in any role. The arm was always there. It was just a question of like, okay, how come this guy who throws so hard can't miss bats, and the control isn't necessarily that great either. Both of those things have been essentially fixed since he joined the A's. Now he's striking out 11 batters per 9 innings. He's not allowing home runs. He's getting a lot of ground balls. And just watching him to the eye test, everything he throws seems like it's like has a natural aversion to wood. Like you cannot hit it. So I'm sold on him. I don't know people who aren't sold on him. I don't know what they're watching, but I guess they're entitled to their opinion.
Zachary, I want to go back to the Giants. 2 games over .500. We were talking about it at the top of the show. A 16-game improvement, although they've played more games this year at the All-Star break than they did last year, but in the mix by default in the National League West, but significantly better than they were last year. What do you make of this season overall? The Giants have some guys coming off their books this year. They obviously didn't want to go over the tax, but what do you think of this season as kind of a stopgap, not terrible, but no true direction for them?
Yeah, I kind of struggle to characterize it any other way than you just did, which is stopgap, not terrible, and just kind of okay. I think the one thing is that last season it was Murphy's Law. Anything that could have possibly gone wrong did go wrong for them. And as a result, they lost 98 games. This season, by comparison, it's not been a cakewalk in general, but by comparison, it's been a lot better. Not as many catastrophic injuries. You've had a lot better, more consistent performances from main guys in the lineup, but it's also a top-heavy roster. There's, you know, probably more depth than expected, but just there's not really enough to form a legitimate, top-of-the-division contender. And that's kind of where they are right now. I mentioned earlier the luxury tax, the farm system. It's going to make trading difficult. Can they dump more salary like they did in the Jackson and Guerin trades so they can possibly make more trades? I don't know. Coming into the year, I kind of pegged the Giants as a team that had a reasonably high floor but not a very high ceiling, and that's pretty much what they've been and what they could be for the rest of the year.
Today we had a really rollicking futures game. 8 home runs in the game as the USA beat the world team 10-6. And pitching for the world team is basically the A's top prospect now, Jesus Luzardo, who started off at high A, now at double A. Overall, an ERA at around 2.5. And, you know, obviously a guy who's getting more notice nationally. Do you have thoughts on what you've seen from Luzardo?
You're not talking to the biggest prospect expert, but he's just one of these guys who's at that point where he's on the radar for even like casual observers like myself. The stuff is there, and I think what separates him from other pitching prospects is that he actually knows what he's doing in terms of the control. And when you marry that with stuff that's pretty good across the board, what you get is a very, very fast rising star who, I mean, you got to look forward to him and AJ Puck sharing that rotation in the future. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, when you look at the A's bullpen, and Lou Trevino is a guy that I think even a lot of A's fans wouldn't tell you. They probably say, do you mean Lee Trevino, the golfer? But Lou Trevino, an 11th round pick out of Slippery Rock 5 years ago, 11 holds, a 1.25 ERA, and the setup man to Trinan, and a guy who really, maybe if he was a bigger name, could have made the All-Star team as well. And it's just one of those guys that we see every year and on basically every team just comes out of nowhere to dominate. What have you seen from Trevino, who's hitting 100 on the gun?
Yeah, similar to Blake Trinan, that, you know, he's got the big arm and just he throws stuff that moves, and it's really hard to get a barrel on it. It feels like in this day and age, relievers like that are a dime a dozen because it just everybody throws 95 to 100 now. Everybody's missing bats. But that doesn't mean they aren't valuable when they're on your team. And, yeah, I was looking at him like, man, that guy should have been an all-star. If he had saves to his name, which is, you know, the most useless statistic imaginable, but still has some clout in, you know, the general consciousness, he would have been an all-star. So I'll just say, if you're listening, Lou, you should have been an all-star.
And finally, we have the home run derby tomorrow. And whatever you think of it, do you like the fact that Max Muncy has come out of nowhere because of injuries with the Dodgers to participate in this? Or do you think this is kind of a tired sideshow?
I tend to go in viewing it as a tired sideshow, and then I always have fun watching it. Mm-hmm. So there's always something that's going to happen that's going to be a lot of fun. Like a couple years ago, they tried out the new format, and it was just this tremendous show, and it turned out that actually it was way better than what came before. And last year you had Aaron Judge hitting the ball 600 feet or whatever it was. This year I'm looking at the field. I'm really excited to see Javier Baez. I think he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. Bryce Harper, if nothing else, is a guy who has extreme raw power. He's going to be fun to watch. Jesus Aguilar. So you kind of root for the guys, and there's always going to be some fun dingers, and that's really all you can ask for is something like this.
That's Zachary Reimer. Read him in Bleacher Report and, of course, on Twitter at Zach Reimer. Thanks so much for your time, especially on a weekend. We appreciate it, and looking forward to catching up with you again real soon.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Rick Tittle and John Dickinson. Lines are open at 888-957-9570. PenskeAutoSales.com text line 95795. And just to finish that thought, JD, about the home run derby, I kind of figured the best thing to do was to not have a clock or a timer, just give everybody 10 outs, and then that would be it, and then add them up at the end. And you think about when Josh Hamilton had his great first round, and then you wouldn't have this fear like Bobby Abreu, oh, I ruined my swing. do you have a thought on the home run derby as it's constructed at this point?
I think the clock has been a nice addition. Or at least I kind of like the clock. Although I'll be honest with you, I didn't think I was going to like the clock. I didn't think it was going to make it significantly better. But now that the All-Star game doesn't count for anything anymore, which was beyond ridiculous, I'm looking forward to a couple of days to kind of check out on it, to be honest. I don't foresee myself planning my evening around the home run derby or the All-Star game in the ways that I've done in the past.
I think that the clock, in my mind, you know, these players are so, you know, anything out of the norm. It's like, oh, World Baseball Classic, I'm going to get hurt. And it's like, no, you're a baseball player, and they're asking you to play baseball. I think the clock kind of adds more tension, and I think that would be something that they wouldn't like. But let's just go through the brackets.
Jesus Aguilar will be facing Rhys Hoskins. First of all, as a sack guy, Rhys Hoskins, what does he mean to you? Anything?
And a Sacramento State guy.
Yeah.
I'm going with Hoskins. Give me Hoskins.
Okay.
As a fellow Hornet, give me Hoskins.
Is he, people in Sacramento, they...
No. And actually, he went to Jesuit High School in Carmichael, which
sure.
is actually 5 minutes from where I grew up and where my parents still live to this day.
I had friends that went to Jesuit. Great school.
I did not go to Jesuit, by the way, just for the record.
You went to Grant.
No, I went to El Camino,
okay,
which is about 5 minutes the other way.
Okay. Alex Bregman versus Kyle Schwarber. Now, here's the thing. Alex Bregman is not only the only American League hitter in there. Alex Bregman is a fantastic player. There's no doubt. The second overall pick. He's about 5'8". I don't think of him as a home run hitter. Very surprised that Alex Bregman is even in there, so I got to go Schwarber.
Well, and on the flip side, yeah, Schwarber is just built for the home run derby, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the guy that you think should be winning this thing. So, yeah, Schwarber.
All right, Bryce Harper and Freddie Freeman. I think there's going to be, because of Bryce Harper, forget his batting average. He's still got the power numbers. Freddie Freeman is having a great season. I see a little bit of an upset there by the Potomac. I'll go Freeman.
I'm going to go Bryce Harper. I actually think, you know, anytime you get a guy in his home park,
mm-hmm.
I think he tends to just get caught up in the momentum of it. I typically don't like Bryce Harper in this event, but I kind of like him this year. I think he makes a run.
That's a clown comment, bro. What was this clown? He said clown question, bro,
yeah.
Right? Max Muncy versus Javier Baez. Max Muncy, by the way, who was an A's draft pick, played for the A's a little bit, not good. The Dodgers picked him up. He wasn't even a September call-up last year. He came up because Seager got hurt and Forsyth got hurt and Turner got hurt, and he's got, you know, 20 jacks, hasn't looked back. What do you think about just the fact that you don't have a Judge or a Stanton? They don't want to do it. You don't have a Chris Davis. You got Max Muncy in there. Do you care one way or the other?
I don't care one way or the other, but I think the Derby would be better if you had Judge and Stanton and Chris Davis in it. But that's what I want to see. That's what people want to see.
Right.
People want to see, you know what people want to see? People want to see Harper, and they want to see Judge, and they want to see Stanton, and Chris Davis would, you know, maybe not a household name, but he hits as many home runs as anybody. They want to see those guys. They want to see a guy like Schwarber. They want to see Chris Bryant. You know, they want to see the ultimate mashers of the game in this thing. That's how it gets juice.
It's like the slam dunk. It's not Kobe. It's Zach LaVine. You know, it's like, great, he can dunk, but that's not who I was looking for.
Exactly. And when the dunk contest was at its peak, that's what it was. It was Jordan and Dominique Wilkins, who were two stars of the game, two of the best players in the league.
No doubt. So Baez over Muncy, you're going with that?
Baez for sure.
Okay,
yeah.
So that would mean then Schwarber faces Baez. Who do you got?
Schwarber.
All right, and that would mean that Hoskins faces Harper in your scenario.
Harper.
Okay, so Harper, Schwarber, final. You're going to go with Harper at home?
Yeah, I'm a homer pick. Harper at home.
All right, fair enough. The phone line's 888-957-9570. Let's go to the forbidden island of Alameda with Scott. What's going on, Scott?
How you guys doing?
Doing well, thanks.
All right, well, what I was trying to talk about, or at least I called and talked to your screener, is about not adding more, getting training, getting good health for these guys. You know, like a Chelsea Lane for the Warriors, who just got, taken by Atlanta. If you can keep these guys healthy, they're on their way. You might need to add a pitcher. Where you find them, I don't know. I'm not that much of an expert. Neither are you guys. Because, you know, I mean...
When you say these guys, you're talking about the A's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course I'm talking about the A's.
Well, we have
two. Call 95.7 the game.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, Scott. You sound like a great guy. This is the other thing, too, JD. As much as... You know, a Chelsea Lane leaves, and we like Chelsea Lane. And then hearing that the analytics guru, Sammy Gelfand, left for the Pistons. Call me if Clay or Dre leaves. I mean, these are nice people, but it's funny how people panic over this. Call me if Steph leaves. Otherwise, I don't care.
There's zero reason to panic. I'll give you that. Although those were two highly respected, appreciated, and I would say adored members of the franchise and of the organization. For sure, I think you could throw Ralph Walker in there as well, and he was a security guy. You know what I mean? It's like, right. when the Warriors become as big as they've become, every single person is a part of it. You know what I mean? Every single person becomes a part of the story when they choose to have a different life path. So,
as long as we keep Dale, the security guard, because he also works A's games. If we lose him, then we're not going to the finals.
Everybody's a part of it.
Absolutely. Just to, and we'll get in, by the way, we will do some basketball talking here in the next segment. But, you know what's funny? You said that it was dumb that they let the exhibition, the All-Star game, decide which league.
I hated that forever.
As much as I hated that, and by the way, I like it now, it's best record. And
yeah.
If you have interleague play, that's the way it should be. I liked it when they say this time it's for real. I like that better than the way it was before, which was National League starts in even years.
Oh, yeah, that was
and and so the A's went over 103 games. They got to play games 1 and 2 in Dodger Stadium. That, to me, was more dumb. So at least now, and people will say, hey, it's not fair because what if you play in a bad division? Whatever. If you're really, really good, you're probably going to end up hosting anyway. Right?
You know, and I kept the number every year from the time they did it. I used to keep track of like the years that there were actually only, I think, 3 years that it wound up being the opposite of what it would have been with best record.
Mm-hmm.
And one year it went in the Cardinals' favor in 2011. Texas should have had it. It also worked against the Cardinals in 2004. They should have had it over the Red Sox. They didn't have it. And then I think the last one was, 2016, right? Because that was the last one that counted, and that was the Cubs should have had it over the Indians. The Cubs wound up winning that series anyway.
And
so.
I think it was Gagne's only blown save was the All-Star game, which meant the Yankees started at home, and they lost to the Marlins anyway.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's just, I think we made too big a deal out of it. I understand in basketball,
for sure,
you want game 7, but baseball, the best team normally is going to win, right? I mean, home field, like I said, you'd rather be at home, but it's not like there are certain places that are intimidating, like Fenway and such, but if you're really good, it shouldn't bug you in baseball.
No, it shouldn't. And what's fascinating is, you know, all the game 7s, and there wasn't a road winner in game 7 from, 79 until 2014 when Bumgarner won in Kansas City.
Great.
Well, now it's 3 road in a row.
Wow.
Bumgarner at Kansas City, the Cubs at Cleveland, and the Astros won at Dodger Stadium last year. So things happen in odd trends.
That is great knowledge from John Dickinson. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break, talk a little hoop on the other side right here, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, thank you so much, and welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Thanks for joining us on your Sunday evening. Rick Tittle with John Dickinson, and we'll be here until 8 o'clock, live and local, taking your calls. And very open to your participation at the toll-free line, which is 888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. You can shoot us a text on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line at 95795. We'll be joined by Steve Kroner in the next segment. That'll be about a half hour. Steve writes for the Chronicle. He's been covering the Bay Bridge series this weekend for sfgate.com as well. So, you know, JD, we were talking at the beginning of the show that the Warriors going to 4 straight finals and basically 400 games, regular season and playoffs, and then we go straight into the draft and the summer league. It's almost like there's no off season anymore. So let's just talk about some of the points. And you know your team's going well when you're talking about the 9th guy in the rotation. But you're the host, the co-host of the NBA This Week. You're our resident NBA expert with Steiny here. Tell us more about Jonas Jerebko, because what I've always known about this guy at 6'10", he can rebound, he can play a little D. He doesn't seem to be a guy who turns the ball over, but he will shoot a three. And for some reason, Caspi refused to shoot last year, which cost him his job. So what do you know about this guy?
Great pickup. I think you encapsulated it perfectly. He's an intelligent player. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes, can shoot the three. I think he's kind of sneaky tough, too. Mm-hmm. Like he's not afraid to bang with you a little bit. He's kind of he's basically a stretch four. And I think if you look at the roster composition for the Warriors at this point, you don't know who the starting center is going to be at the beginning of the season because Cousins is going to be hurt.
Right.
Oh, yeah, by the way, they signed DeMarcus Cousins.
How about that?
But you look at the other four starters are obviously the four All-Stars. You know Livingston's on the bench. You know Iguodala's on the bench. You'd like to keep McCaw. You've got other bigs in Jordan Bell and Damian Jones and Kevon Looney. One of those guys is going to have to start at the beginning of the year until Cousins gets healthy. But that's your five-man rotation, basically. You don't really have a backup four or a backup stretch four, and they like to use Durant and Iguodala as kind of the backup four-man as much as possible. They would use Jordan Bell or Kevon Looney at mm-hmm. times in that spot, mm-hmm. but it gives you a more skilled option that can just eat up minutes. You talk about an innings eater. Jarebko's a minutes eater. If you want to give Kevin Durant a night off or if he develops some kind of an injury, you've got options and different skill sets now at the four, similar to the way the Warriors had him at the five spot over the last couple of years, where you almost have three or four guys that do something a little bit differently. Now you have it at the four spot as well.
And he's also, basically, if you think about it, a regular season player, because when the Hamptons five or whatever, your core guys are getting 28 minutes, and then the playoffs start and they're getting 38 minutes, then those guys like Jarebko, they're not going to be participating. So someone needs to eat up, as you say, these minutes during the season. Getting back to Looney, were you surprised that he came back at the price that they got him at?
A little bit,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, and it happened relatively quickly, too, which surprised me. I'm just not sure. Look, the Warriors have this thing. They have it rolling right now because everybody wants to be a part of it, and it's so special that you want to keep it rolling. And I think Kevon Looney may have looked at it like, yeah, I could get paid somewhere else a little bit more, but am I really ready to go have to stand on my own as far as – you know, being a more impactful player mm-hmm. versus being a really good player the way I'm used mm-hmm. in this system. So I think it was almost, yeah, sure, he didn't get an offer that knocked his socks off. But I also think, Rick, for Looney, it was he wasn't really quite ready to leave the nest yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
as far as, okay,
right.
I'm going to go fly. And but if you leave, then that means you're expected to stand on your own, mm-hmm. not necessarily fit into the system. I think maybe he felt he needed one or two more years fitting into the system.
And it's not too bad when you start playoff games for the Warriors. That's pretty darn fun as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Cousins because I've always liked his talent, and I always think if he was a true knucklehead, then Popovich and Coach K would not have dealt with him with Team USA. He wanted to stay in SAC. We know what happened there. I remember him flying back and talking to the fans as well. He's going to be out for basically the first half of the season, although he thinks he'll be ready quicker. When I heard the news that the Warriors got him, I was elated because, like you said, this didn't happen for a good 40 years. But now I know you know Cousins a lot better than I do with the years that you spent covering Sacramento as well. And you, as I said, knowing Cousins as you do, what went through your head when you heard about it?
Yeah, and his rookie year was my last full-time year working in Sacramento. It was his rookie season. And I've, over the years subsequently when he was there, you know, covered that team part-time on kind of a freelance basis here and there. He's not a knucklehead. He just has a temper. He has a temper. And he's one of those guys that at times gets caught up thinking that the world's against him, that everybody's against him. The officials are against him, the opponent's against him, the narrative that he's this uncontrollable wild man is against him. Mm. And I think it gets in his head and he loses it. He's got a quick trigger, a quick fuse. I think he will absolutely thrive with the Warriors. I think another thing he needs is players in a locker room that he respects, which there were very few of at any point during his Sacramento tenure. The other thing he needs is a coach that he respects, which there were very few of during his tenure in Sacramento. The coach that got along with him the best during that tenure was Michael Malone, mm-hmm. who the Kings basically fired for no reason.
Because he wasn't Steve Kerr, that's why he was fired.
After they had a 9-5 start to a year, and then Cousins actually got sick and missed 10 games, and they went 2-8, and he got fired at the end of that run after Cousins didn't play for about 3 weeks with an illness. So I think he's going to respect Steve Kerr. He respects the hell out of Draymond Green, and I think Draymond Green's the guy that'll get in his ear and talk to him. Mm-hmm. They're very similar personalities, honestly. There's a fine line. I think Draymond's been more under control, but they both have that fuse. And I think as far as just players go, he respects Curry and Thompson and Durant. Those guys aren't necessarily getting in his face like Draymond will, but I think he has a respect for their game as players that have accomplished more than he has. He'll fall in line.
What do you think about the possible tinderbox between – because when Draymond dresses down KD, you can tell he doesn't like it, but he just kind of nods his head. You know, he's like, okay, all right, that's fine. And, you know, I'll send you a text at 4:30 in the morning. Do you see a scenario where Draymond starts screaming at Cousins, like, what are you doing over there? I need you in the low block. You don't know what you're doing. And, do you know, with Cousins, you say a little bit of paranoia, self-destroyer there?
I think it'll be all right.
I think
he can take it from Draymond.
Okay.
I don't think he could take it. The problem is guys like Jason Thompson used to do that to him, and it would drive him up a wall because he'd be like, you're Jason Thompson. You're a scrub. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing telling me when I'm scoring 30 a night on a team full of losers? You're telling me I'm the guy that doesn't know what he's doing. Like, that particular scenario happened a lot in Sacramento with different players. And Jason Thompson's a hell of a nice guy, but it's got to be somebody that Cousins feels like is on his level. And the Warriors have a bunch of guys that he feels are on that level or even above the level that he's been able to attain in his career.
So when we know how he got along with the unibrow, even though they kind of play a similar type of game, but now coming to the Warriors, when Kerr sits down with him and say, look, we're almost never going to call your number. We have world-class shooters. You've seen our centers here. Even Bogut would just rebound and pass. Pachulia started for us a lot. Looney has started for us. We don't need you to score 30, and we're not even going to call your number that many times. Rebound, get a lot of putbacks, block some shots. And he's going to buy into all that.
A lot to chew on here, and we haven't even really talked about how the injury factors into this whole thing. We'll get to that, but I want to, just as far as his skills go, he's a really good passer. Like, he's a very good passer. I don't think people realize how good a passer he is. So he's somebody that actually could fit right in at the high post in particular in the Warriors offense and really
look for cutters,
be able to move it. In fact, he's even got a little of that Steph knucklehead pass to him. Like, he'll make some
behind the
some
back
dumb passes, like where you're like, why are you doing that? But right. He has such a vision for the game and a desire to make that play. So he's actually a very good high-low type of a player. So I think he'll thrive there. The other thing about him, he's a pretty good shooter from the outside, which is a dynamic that the Warriors don't have a ton of. Think David West almost, only with a three-point shot, because Cousins has got a three-point shot. So I actually think when he's back and he's healthy, he'll start. Steve Kerr's already said that. But I actually think he's going to be somebody that'll be staggered to play the David West minutes at the top of that first quarter, or top of that second quarter and fourth quarter. I could see Cousins almost being where he plays maybe the first 6 minutes of every quarter, and that's how he gets to his 24 minutes, and then maybe he'll finish a half, maybe he won't, and that's how he'll get from 24 minutes to maybe 30 minutes a game if he shows he's healthy enough to play that much. I also think the injury is something that has to be talked about, Rick, which is just it's the fact that the Warriors can bring him along slowly. He's going to need to be brought along slowly. And I think it helps that the Warriors can get minutes for the other bigs because Cousins isn't going to be able to play. You can ease him in.
Why does he say he's ready by camp? Who's he talking to?
He's got something to prove.
Got a doctor from Grenada?
I'll give you a little bit of the backstory, and this is okay. Things that
this is why I love talking NBA with you.
I mentioned the temper, and Cousins has always kind of got that chip on his shoulder as far as I want to prove to this guy or that guy or whatever. It really ticked him off that nobody called and offered him anything. It really ticked him off to a point where I think once nobody really called or wanted to make an offer after a couple of days, he said, okay, well, I'm going to sign with one of the contenders. And, you know, he called it his trump card. I think he told Mark Spears that in an interview. Like, it was, hey, if nobody offers me anything, well, you know what? Then I'm going to go to the Warriors. And just, you can hate me then. Because
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.